Thank you all very much for coming back from the break. I'm a graduate student at University of California, Davis, and I'm going to be talking with you today about using alternative water management in California rice systems to reduce greenhouse gases and maintain yields. So why rice? Just to kind of give some background, rice is a staple crop for over half of the world's population. It's produced on more than 150 million acres globally. And California has a pretty, a lot of people don't know that much about California rice, but it's got a pretty large footprint within the U.S., so it produces about a quarter of the U.S. rice, and mostly up in the northern Sacramento Valley. Conventional rice management is using continuously flooded fields throughout the growing season. And that practice results in very good yields and good nitrogen use efficiency. But there's been a lot of recent concerns raised about heavy metal accumulation, water use, and especially greenhouse gas emissions, which I'll touch on a little bit more. So according to the IPCC, rice cultivation is one of the major sources of greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture, accounting for about 11% of greenhouse gas emissions. And this is because the anaerobic decomposition in the flooded fields produces methane, which then is produced continually throughout the growing season, and that leads to a very high global warming potential. And so what we've seen is that there's a practice being promoted called alternate wetting and drying, where instead of having fields continuously flooded, you actually have the flood of the fields and then drain them. And this has been shown promising results with reducing greenhouse gas emissions and also maintaining yields and nitrogen use efficiency. But this practice has not yet been evaluated for California rice systems. So our goal with this experiment was to provide scientific evidence that alternate wetting and drying can significantly reduce greenhouse gas emissions and methane emissions while maintaining optimal grain yields at the same nitrogen rates. So that's our objective of our experiment. We broke that down into four hypotheses. The first is that we'd see no difference in grain yield between the conventional and the alternate wetting and drying treatments. Also, we hypothesized that the required N application rates would not differ between the two different water management treatments. And lastly, that methane emissions would be significantly lower because you're draining the fields in alternate wetting and drying, and nitrous oxide emissions will be negligible for all the treatments, so that we'll have a significant reduction in global warming potential. And so this is our treatment structure. We have three different treatments. We have main plots, and then within each of those main plots, we have end trials. And our three main plot treatments are water-seeded rice with continuous flood irrigation, which is the conventional practice in California, the water-seeded with flush irrigation after canopy closure, which is what we're calling alternate wetting and drying because the fields are alternately drained and flooded, and then drill-seeded with alternate wetting and drying or alternate draining and flooding throughout the growing season. And so this is, I don't know how many of you are familiar with California rice, but in different parts it's grown different ways. So this is drill seeded, is just like any other grain crop seeding, and that's done a lot more down towards the Sacramento Delta, whereas up near the where we're doing our research up in Biggs, California, the traditional practice is water seeding, where the fields are basically rolled and fertilized and then flooded up and the seed is flown on by airplane. So those were our two major seeding treatments. And then our water management treatments look like this. So you can see that the green line right here, this is the conventional. So that is basically as soon as it's flooded up and seeded, then it's that flood is maintained throughout the growing season, and then finally you just drain down for harvest. And so that's the conventional system. The other water seeded system is this red line here, which is basically managed the same as the conventional system with continuous flood up until you have canopy closure. But then as soon as you get canopy closure, you drain it. And this is the volumetric water content here and the date on the x-axis. And that spikes down very quickly. And so we'll see that becomes very important later on in the system. And the last treatment is the drill-seeded alternate wetting and drying, which is basically flush irrigated and held a few different times at key intervals within the rice phenology. And so the water-seeded treatments are all fertilized right at the start of the growing season before flood-up, but the drill-seeded treatment is broadcast fertilized about a month into the growing season. And so, as I mentioned, we also had subplots with five different nitrogen application rates in order to evaluate the nitrogen response of these treatments. And then lastly, we monitored greenhouse gas emissions, so nitrous oxide and methane, and we did that using vented non-flow through flux chambers and four time points in order to develop the flux. So our first hypothesis was that the grain yields will be the same, and we actually saw that. So this is the 2013 growing season, and you can see there's basically no difference between all three different water management treatments. And the 2014 growing season, we saw slightly lower yields, but you still have the same basic yields for all the treatments. And so our second hypothesis is that the nitrogen required for maintaining these optimal yields will not differ, and nitrogen use efficiency will not differ. And so we can see that this is the N rate on the x-axis, and here we have our grain yield. And so the nitrogen response curves look very similar for all three treatments. This is from the 2013 growing season. We don't have our 2014 data back yet, but you can see that they basically increase in yields up to what is the recommended nitrogen application rate of about 180 kilograms per hectare, and then that yield basically plateaus or even starts to decline a little bit. So we've seen that we can maintain rice grain yields, and we can maintain the nitrogen response curves. And so let's look at our last hypothesis about whether this methane emissions will be significantly decreased under alternate wetting and drying. And so this is our conventional treatment, right? So this is the same volumetric water content over here that we saw in the first graph on water management. And so it's basically flooded throughout the growing season. And nitrous oxide for this treatment, as expected, because it's under flooded conditions, is basically non-existent throughout the growing season. And what we see is that as you have a more prolonged flood, and also as the plant starts to develop and get bigger, methane emissions basically increase to up to a point that corresponds about with the plant's transition into reproductive growth. And then we see a little bit of a decline, but still continued methane emissions. And then actually during the drain down, you get another big spike of methane emissions in this treatment. And we see a similar thing for the alternate wetting and drying treatment. Very little nitrous oxide emissions throughout the growing season. And you see the same beginning, right? The with the flooded fields in the beginning, these methane emissions are starting to increase and increase. But as soon as you have that first drain event, those basically drop. And during the other periods of flooding, you get a little bit of methane emissions, but pretty insignificant compared to what we would expect if that had been a continuous flood. And then our drill-seeded treatment, we see that basically there is a little bit of a peak in methane emissions during the longest flood, but during other floods too, but very reduced compared to the other treatments. And actually there were some nitrous oxide emissions in this, but because of the scale, this is global warming potential on the kilograms of CO2 equivalents per hectare. The peaks are so reduced for nitrous oxide because they really have a pretty negligible contribution in this case to global warming potential, just because the magnitude of the emissions is so different. And so you can see that basically these emissions during this drain event, this is held here because it was fertilized right here, so the water is held here. So you see that the methane emissions are cut by this drain. But why don't we get significant nitrous oxide emissions here? And that's because of the level of extractable N. So we evaluated a fertilization for the drill-seeded treatment happens right at the start of this graph pretty much, and for the water-seeded treatment it happens about a month earlier. And you can see that all the zero N treatments basically have low levels of extractable N throughout. The water-seeded treatments are already declining in their levels of extractable N, and it's a little bit prolonged in the drill-seeded treatment, but you also see that by the time the flood is over, as indicated by this shading, you see that the levels of extractable N have basically dropped to zero. So by managing with that flood right after fertilization, we can prevent high nitrous oxide emissions, which also prevents us from offsetting the reduction in methane. And so if we look at whether the global warming potential was reduced due to lower methane emissions, we can see in both 2013 and 2014, you have a very significant reduction. In the green is the conventional global warming potential. The water-seeded alternate wetting and drying is the red, and the blue is the drill-seeded alternate wetting and drying. So you can see that you have a pretty significant decrease in global warming potential from the water-seeded alternate wetting and drying, and an even further decrease. And that's because we have those, when we saw those graphs, we have those significant reductions in methane emissions, and nitrous oxide emissions are pretty negligible for all three systems. And so we saw that we can basically reduce or maintain grain yields with all these three treatments, and also that we can significantly reduce the global warming potential. So we accomplished both those objectives and confirmed those hypotheses. Where we need to go in the future is a lot more research is needed to evaluate water use under these systems. That is something we were not able to do in this system just because our plots are so small. There's a lot of interchange of water between the systems, but it is, and also we have fairly heavy vertisols, heavy clays up in that area. So we don't expect a lot of infiltration, but it would be a really important component to evaluate water use. And a collaborator with our lab that will be talking about a system where they did evaluate water use a little bit later. Also really important is to analyze its economic feasibility and also the infrastructural feasibility. So these plots we used were pretty small plots. But at the same time, if you have a larger, much larger scale plot, we have to see how quickly we can get that flood water across and how quickly we can drain it so that we manage optimally for all the rice within that basin. And right now there's not currently a financial incentive to reduce methane emissions, so that is something that the growers might not necessarily look at as intensively without that financial incentive. And so I'd like to thank the UC Davis Agroecosystems Lab and also the California Rice Research Board for funding this research, and all the staff that I worked with at UC Davis and the Rice Experiment Station. And so thank you all very much too, and are there any questions?
Drainage.
Drainage.
Drainage. You drainage the short period, right?
Yeah.
You get the, usually methane emission decrease. Mm-hmm. But in China, we do much less experiment. We found that during this experiment, the curve increased. So why do you do the hypothesis that yield is the same?
The yields are the same?
Yes. Yeah. Why do you do this hypothesis? In China, we get the high yield.
You get a higher yield with the drainage?
Yes.
So we saw, our worry was more that, so the question was that why is the hypothesis that the yields are the same? Because they see that the yields are actually increased under alternate wetting and drying.
Yeah.
And so we had actually seen a lot of reports of yield decreases under alternate wetting and drying. So our hypothesis is that you could manage the system so that you maintain the same level of yields. I mean, if you could increase yields, that would be obviously an even better situation. We didn't see that. We didn't see any significant difference in yields. But we think the reason we didn't see a decrease in yields is because of the level of water management. So we reflooded each time it was at 35% volumetric water content, corresponding, you know, roughly to, let's say, 70% water fill porosity, so, or pore space. And because we reflooded at that still relatively high water content, we think we did not see a decline in yields. But we didn't see any increase either, unfortunately. Yeah.
If we keep the financial incentive high, is it feasible for growers to do AWD, and is there a water saving where they can cash on?
I think that it definitely has a lot more to research with the infrastructure, because these fields, the scale of the basins is so large, to make sure you can get the water on and off is a little bit of a challenge. So these plots were relatively small, about a hectare, so we haven't been able to evaluate that, but that is something that going forward we would like to evaluate the feasibility of that. And especially water savings, because as I mentioned, that's a really important component. You might, even if it is a little bit more logistically challenging and you don't get increased yields, if there are water saving, that might be enough of an incentive for growers to actually do this. But it's something that at our scale is difficult to determine. Yes.
How do you quantify the relationship between methane emission
growth? How have I defined those two? Just based off the IPCC 2014 report, it has a 100-year global warming potential for both nitrous oxide and methane. So the most recent numbers are 21 for carbon dioxide equivalents for methane and 310 for nitrous oxide. Any other questions? All right, well, thank you all very much.